Hey there, welcome to ATL and 29, a podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta and Mexico City. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We're recording on a Saturday night following a win over the Orlando Magic and a loss to the Miami Heat that leave the Atlanta Hawks in a three-way tie for the Southeast Division lead with exactly those two teams. Glenn, what did you see tonight in a loss to a substantially shorthanded Miami Heat team?
Yeah, well, it's like the Heat have these like programmed players that don't, it almost doesn't matter who's in the uniform, especially on the defensive end. I mean, their execution is just so consistent and at such a high level. I noted during the game that their defensive habits are as good as there is in the league, maybe the best. And so, yeah, the Hawks looked a little tired coming, to 48 hours, a little less than 48 hours from playing at altitude. And a game that they've had to play all the way down to the final seconds, so it was a fully exerting, kind of experience there. And I thought they fought hard to try to get back, and kind of get kind of in striking distance at the end. I think they got it. I can't remember if they got it to below eight. I felt like eight was about as close as they got it, maybe seven in one possession. But, but I mean, the kind of zooming out, another slow start. That seems to be kind of the one kind of consistent theme across all the games is kind of a slow start. I think the Milwaukee game is the only one I would say that. They've been kind of running just kind of a risk profile with slow starts, for most of these games. And that was there again tonight. So tonight, how much of that was more of the same? How much of that was the fatigue, from the in Mexico City? Hard to determine.
Yeah, I mean, Bam and the Bums are kind of a scary group, right? It's like, because you know that they're all fully programmed in the Heat system, and like somehow them having Bam and maybe not Jimmy Butler is I think that's scarier than if they had Jimmy Butler and didn't have Bam, because you can kind of coordinate so much around Bam, really on both ends, because he's absolutely he was the best player on both ends of the floor, just head and shoulders above every single other player that was out there from either team. And as good as he was defensively, like that Marcin Gortat Memorial moving screen on offense, with the right shooters and players that are running the system is going to get you good looks. And they did a heck of a job. We've got Wes Morton with us here too. Welcome, Matt. Wes, we might need to give Wes a minute. We're going to give Wes a minute to get fired up.
Hello,
But
can you hear me?
oh,
Yeah.
we found you, Wes.
Hey,
Welcome
I'm in
aboard.
here. Thanks for having me.
Yes,
Yeah, of
sir.
course. Anytime.
So we're just talking about the tonight's Heat game, and I agree with you though. Like, watching sort of live courtside, it's like it was still not courtside. My seats are not that good. Watching live in the building from a diagonal about halfway up, you could see that it was still just a professional effort, like the level of physical effort, like the intensity, the attention to detail, and just all the little things I think are still very encouraging for this team. Like, for instance, there were a couple of fast breaks where, Trey got ahead of the pack. And I think there was one where he maybe tried to pass it to DeJounte, and just watching them after the miscue, because I think they ended up just turning it over, just like the body language is just immaculate. They just like dap each other up, but it's like, okay, let's go play defense. Like, it's just, I don't know. I still think it's a very encouraging group from that perspective. And just things like continuing to play defense, and they're still trying to figure it out. They had an issue, according to Quinn Snyder, of sort of hesitation and not getting up the threes that were there. But aside from a slow start, I think that's encouraging. I have all these little questions that I want to ask you tonight. One of which is, there were a couple of times where Trey kind of got out in transition in the second half, but he's kind of got that chase down blocker coming behind him. What do you want to see in those situations to, you know, for him to try to get a shot up, but also kind of protect it from whoever's charging down from behind? Because it seems like there's, I don't know, like I'm like, this is like basketball lab here. Like, you know, is there something you could do there? Can you take like a hasty little like finger roll and just kind of underhand push it? Like, what can you do to kind of shield from that chase down guy? Because it seemed like he was looking for solutions there that he couldn't find.
Well, and then this kind of goes back to how good the Heat are in all the detailed areas of the game, right? Because, I mean, we've seen Trey. He's in the sixth season now. We know he wants you to run up on his back. And then he gets you right on his back, and then he has taken the space away from the defender to get on top of him, right? So that's what he wants, right? And but the Heat, they're not doing that. They're going to manage that space. They're going to leave a lot of space to kind of get on top of him when he kind of goes up for that shot, you know? And I like that you mentioned, you know, kind of the experience of being there live watching the Heat. I mean, watching that team play live is like a completely different experience watching them on TV. I've probably seen them play in the Spo era, I don't know, 20 times in a live, and it just jumps out of you. Like, even if you just like stop watching the ball, like how hard all the defenders away from the ball are working, always on time, always in the right spot, always being physical. This guy is trying to come set a pin down for the guy I'm guarding. Nope, that's not happening. I'm going to jump out and like deny the pin, you know, and they're just like, it must be like a mentally exhausting way to play across a whole NBA season. It's just kind of, it's crazy. But when you see them do that, you know, I remember my twin brother watching them play in Houston at the apex of the Harden Rockets, and they just went in and absolutely dismantled that Rocket. I watched it on TV. He was there, and he was like, man, it's like, it's a machine. But kind of going back to Trey, it's like, I think you have to have a second guy in transition with you. I think you have to have options. You know, the Heat are so, if you kind of have one option that's available to you, the Heat are going to absolutely do everything they can to kind of attack that one option. And so I feel like when you get them in transition, you got to have multiple options there, which you can't always set that up perfectly, you know, if you're out in front of the play or, you know, or whatever that is. But like, it's just their preparation. They know, like, Trey wants me to run up on his back. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to leave space to attack the shot at the top. And then they do it every time, you know. And then if he starts to kind of slow down and look for passing angles, like, they detect that right away and they start playing the passing angle, you know. So it's infuriating to play them in kind of a random, you know, middle of the season, you know, 2 days after coming back from an international game. You know, it wasn't an ideal schedule situation for the Hawks, but you still have to, you know, as frustrating as the Heat are with a lot of the things that they're very good at getting away with, like, you know, you mentioned the Gortat thing. Like, Gortat wasn't graceful in how he set moving screens. He would like try to set a moving screen and squash you in the process, right? Bam, it's just like, what? I'm not moving, you know. And he kind of looks like he's not moved. You know, he's super graceful at it. So all of the attention to detail, I mean, when I watch them play, it's sort of like a dual experience, because there are some things that like Kyle Lowry and a few other guys do that just kind of drive you crazy. Like, come on, you know, play basketball here. On the other half, I mean, it's like art. It really is kind of at that level. And I can't help but just kind of appreciate, you know, what you're seeing there. It's impressive, you know, that what the machine that they have kind of going down there is impressive. And that's what allowed them to make that run that they made last year. Was everybody was ready to go, you know, and they took advantage of the opportunities in front of them and all that. So I think it's a hard one. I don't know what Trey does apart from hoping a second guy gets in the play or whatever it is. It's not easy. So that's a very long answer, but yeah. Heat appreciation rant.
Wes, let me ask you this. What do you think? There's a couple of things going into this, but like, it felt like maybe the Hawks didn't get everything that they needed to get from the power forward position tonight. The Heat, you know, are so good at essentially playing four guards around Bam a lot. And I'm just wondering overall what you thought, Wes, of, you know, number one, sort of the overall rotation that was used tonight, because that's something that's been in flux. And tonight they went with Jalen starting and no AJ and, you know, a smattering of Wes Matthews minutes. And you know, when are we going to see AJ again? If the Hawks stay healthy.
Well, yeah, I think we'll see AJ. I mean, I think Quinn had some quotes either maybe pregame or at some point anyway, that, you know, he's really focused with AJ about just getting down like defensive fundamentals, like getting those reps. Like, you know, it wasn't as if he, it didn't read to me like he's in some sort of doghouse or whatever, but it was more that there he was trying to bring him along. What Quinn is asking of him now is different than what he had asked of him. He and Nate McMillan had asked of him last season. So, you know, he kind of just wants him to be ready before he kind of steps into a role where he's, you know, trying to throw him out here against the Heat and doing what they do, for example. You know, I'm not sure that would have been the answer. I think he's got more of a long-term vision as far as, you know, being able to communicate within the defense and switch on to guys and know all those sort of fundamentals. So I think it's more of a, like, obviously he trusts, you know, a guy like Wes Matthews a little bit more. He started to play Garrison Matthews, of course, in the past couple of days a little bit. But, you know, in general, Quinn's got his rotation pretty tight to start. Just sort of the guys that the core eight guys he trusts to, you know, kind of run the things he wants to do. And then at some point during the season, like, they're going to pick up injuries. They're going to have all these other things that like KG will come in and play and Wes Matthews will ramp up and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's always been a Quinn thing, go dating back to his days in Utah where, you know, rookies just didn't really, he wasn't in a different way than Nate is, but that they were always very conservative with bringing along rookies. Like, they didn't want to throw them out there early. And Quinn's very focused on development. So, yeah, as far as the rotation for tonight's game, yeah, I think it was just getting Wes Matthews sort of back in rhythm. I mean, the fast start from Miami and the slow start from the Hawks pretty clearly kind of threw all of that out of the whack, I think. So, you know, sort of the start of the second half, you know, I would have been surprised to just see like eight guys just pare them down. And, you know, they obviously came out a little bit more aggressive in the second half. Sort of been a theme this year, but I mean, like, I wouldn't exactly read anything into the rotation itself until we get to maybe game 20, game 25. That's kind of when Quinn kind of figures out, okay, I can expand to this many guys. I might go to 10 or 11 guys, but it's pretty common for him to be at, you know, right about 8.5, 9 guys this early in the season. And, you know, it's almost like he wants the main guys to have those fundamentals down, and then they're going to sort of pass that along to the 10th, 11th guy when they come in. So it's not as much as they're being thrown into the deep end, that they're able to, you know, operate and get feedback from the peers on the court, from the other players, as opposed from, you know, coaching staff and all that. So
tonight, Okongwu's worst game of the year, probably one of the worst games of his career, honestly. He really, really struggled to have any impact tonight at all, right? We will look back at the end of the year, and this will be one of Bam's best 8 to 10 games of the year. Like, you know, that's how good he was tonight. And Jalen still made some, you know, a handful of nice plays, but I think what we saw tonight is when a defense throws something really different at you, like that, the Hawks struggled with that zone. I mean, they kind of, like they do under Quinn, they kind of chip away and kind of problem solve and incrementally, kind of iteratively kind of problem solve. They kind of started kind of making some shots and finding the shot location there at the end. But like Jalen had a hard time figuring out, okay, how do I make my normal impact here tonight? And I, you know, I view it as it's a good feedback loop for him. It's a good feedback loop for the Hawks. What Jalen saw tonight is representative of the kind of defense you see in the playoffs. And if the Hawks are going to be a successful playoff team, Jalen's got to take these feedback loops and go, okay, why was I not able to make the impact on the game I want to make tonight? Not a failure, learning opportunity, a feedback loop, right? And he needs those. And so in that sense, I'm glad they caught Miami when they did. Because this was, I think, a really, really valuable feedback loop for them around that. You know, Okongwu's first game of the season, Hunter's worst game of the season. Trey was super inefficient, and they almost got back in it at the end. So I think the one consistent thing you see is they keep working, they keep problem solving, they keep kind of working at it. And yeah, Quinn's like, man, you guys need to, like, against a zone, when you have an open three, you need to put that thing up. And they were hesitant a number of times against that zone. The thing I appreciate, even though I know Hawks fans wish they were 6-3 or better, at this point in time, is they keep working and they just keep problem solving. They keep working at it. Tonight, that got them back, in kind of, range, and that's been true along the way. Now, if they can't figure out how to come out and get better starts, that's going to cost them 8 games on the year, 10 games, whatever number, right? Have they been lucky, or have they just been good enough kind of fighting back, But an immature team would be like, ah, we can work our way back in it. A mature team is like, no, we've been kind of, living dangerously, with these slow starts. It'd be interesting to see how they kind of attack that. But I mean, great point, Kevin, around how Miami goes like really small 1 through 4 and just kind of generates a ton of ball pressure, right? And disrupts everything that you're doing. And then next thing you know, like, you can't even work offense through your 3 and your 4, at all, because the guards are just like chewing up 14 seconds of shot clock, just trying to kind of get into something. So, yeah, I think a great feedback loop for the team.
Yeah, one thing this season has, it's only 9 games in, but this season has reminded me of, like, I think of a metaphor like a baseball team when they're facing a starting pitcher. The starting pitcher's got the edge the first time through the rotation, and then the second time they're able to pick up on stuff, and the third time they usually really kind of shell them, and that's kind of how it seems like. This will be good for the next time they play Miami. I mean, they're going to play Miami 4 times this year. A game like today is going to be, okay. We struggled. Miami's got the system that they're consistently running under Spo, and they struggled for sure. But they're trying to learn on the fly. Obviously, Snyder's implemented certain new things, and like I said, just having the problem solve. Tweeted out something during the game that I looked it up. The Hawks were 18th in net rating in the first half, and then fourth in net rating in the second half of games through today's games. And we kind of see that, like the Minnesota game, they obviously really struggled in the first half and then really turned it on the second half. Like you mentioned, the problem solving on the job, like, you obviously, in an ideal world, you want to come out of the gates and have all the answers, but that's just not realistic. Like, they're in kind of a transition sort of a stage with picking up all these new things. So I don't necessarily look at it as a bad thing. Like, they're sitting at 5-4 and all that. But I think the next time they see some of these teams, the Heat especially, some of these other teams, they're going to have a better idea of, okay, like I said, the Heat drop in the zone. We need to, as soon as we catch it around the 3-point arc and fire up those threes, like, now it's more instrumental in that of, we physically seen it on the court. What we need to do, what we need to problem solve, how do we get into our actions a little bit faster, like they did in the second half versus the first half, and not sit there and dribble the ball for 12 seconds. Like, it's kind of, they're just kind of learning from experience. I think the next time they see some of these teams, they'll get off the hotter starts, as opposed to these slow starts that we've been seeing.
One thing that I didn't like relative to the slow start is that the Hawks, if I remember correctly, initially did not have a shoot around scheduled for this morning. And then they had a shoot around. And I remember thinking, man, that seems like you're messing. Like, they had an off day coming back from Mexico yesterday, but even still, like, the adjustment from the altitude and the international travel and coming back 2 time zones. To me, if it was up to me, I would have just done one of the, 4 o'clock walkthroughs in the arena where you work through stuff just prior to the game that they do, sometimes, like if they have a back to back or something like that. That's what I would have done, just trying to save the legs and avoid the, I think, the lethargy that you saw in that 22-9 start. But Going back to the guard, the quote unquote guard play, meaning sort of all the non-bigs, like this to me, in theory, if you didn't care at all about Jalen's development, this would have felt like a start Sadiq Bey kind of game. Kind of going with a, what I think Glenn said in a tweet, if I can summarize this correctly, like the thing that you really want to do against the Heat is push the ball in transition and get it into the corners with a shooting threat. One, because if you get the shot there, that's great. With somebody like Bey, that's a great shot, or Bogey, that's a great shot. But even if you don't get the shot off, if you make them defend that corner and then have to work back to Trey coming out of the corner as opposed to just setting up in the middle of the floor, you've compromised them a little bit. And so, I would have liked for this to have been a great Sadiq Bey game, and it was absolutely not a great Sadiq Bey game because it just felt like, the Heat defended him well and made him a decision maker where he had to get the pass to the right places, and he just didn't look comfortable in that role at all. So, in theory, it didn't work out that way anyways.
Yeah, it happened to Jalen when he drove. It happened a couple times to Bay when he drove. I mean, Hunter was, it was rough. Like, the Heat are like, if you're an average ball handler, we're gonna attack you when you're dribbling. The Hawks realized with Hawkes that he's they started attacking his dribble just as a young high me there and stuff like that, and good defenses do that. And so, that was there. But in the Heat, like when you drive, they collapse, but they have this kind of way that they manage their spacing in the way they collapse the paint too. So one guy is kind of affecting the ball handler. The two guys are kind of stacking and setting up a attack the passing lanes, and they're trying to push you deep through the paint before you can kind of make a decision and get you close to the baseline. And they either jump your shot from behind the backboard or right by the back, try to work around the backboard or a passing lane. And the Hawks, I mean, it felt like the Hawks were passing before they fell out of bounds on the baseline all night. It was probably what, six times maybe. It just felt like it was all night long. They were trying to kind of, work themselves out of trouble kind of down on the baseline. And that's what the Heat were wanting to do to them. So, yeah, it was a tough schedule situation. But again, I watched this team play tonight and stay focused on the tasks. Not get frustrated by the results and just keep working. And if they can keep doing that, that's going to serve them well this year. And that it will. Quinn can't run an 8.5 man rotation 82 games. It's a good question earlier, right? AJ's got to play, or Garrison's got to play, or Wes Matthews is clearly a guy he trusts. Wes Matthews was really good tonight. I mean, it's surprising like how crisp he was kind of in his kind of first time out there. And so that's a really nice option to have, there, especially against the Heat. Like when the Heat are running that zone, you want, can you get Bay plus Bogey plus Matthews on the floor, and then a Hunter in the mix when one of those guys has to sit? Hunter's a good shooter again, in that situation. So I still think the kind of the broader observation here is the characteristics of, yeah, the slow start. Got to work on that for sure. But their persistence to kind of just working and working and working, if that's who they're going to be all year long, that's going to help them win, I don't know, five, six, seven, eight, whatever number of games that they would have lost maybe or likely in prior seasons. And that's what kind of makes 50 maybe reachable for you, is if you just keep working through adversity. And so far through nine games, I don't remember a game where they were just like, oh man, screw this. We're not, they just keep working. And that's just a different quality about this team that makes you feel kind of encouraged about what you see so far. For me, anyway.
There was a Trey, DeJounte, Bogdanovich, Hunter, and then a center. I think it was Okongwu, but then I think Capella came in soon after. But like that felt like the kind of lineup that would have been a good setup tonight if you could get to it more often. And on a night like that, sort of Wesley Matthews is sort of a plug and play option to replace one of those perimeter guys. That's an ideal fit, but one of the things that Quinn Snyder said before the game is that at least for now, he's on a 10 minute per game restriction. So they were operating within that parameter tonight. We haven't potted since the Orlando game went down. Do you have any staunch takeaways from that game, Wes? I know for me, one thing that I've like today, I don't think Trey had a good game tonight in terms of like floor generalsmanship. I have no idea. I don't know what I'm trying to say there, but I am encouraged by Trey sort of finding his shot, his long distance shot the last couple of games. I think that'll go a long way for his confidence going forward. But is there anything else that you liked or didn't like from the Orlando game, Wes?
Yeah, I think the big thing, I think it starts with, Trey's got to shoot threes. I mean, he just has to. Like that's I think kind of the foundation of, presenting himself as a threat from not just the 3-point line, but out beyond the 3-point line, just ends up opening up things for everything else, right? Opens up the high pick and roll and getting into the lane, getting to the floater, certainly he's listening to Quinn Snyder. He wants him to pick up threes. There's actually one play tonight I thought was interesting. I think DeJounte drove and Trey basically faded to the corner. It was a far corner from where I was at and got off like a catch and shoot three. He missed it, but it was something where he had to relocate based on DeJounte driving and sucking in the defense, and he got an open catch and shoot three. That's something that, I think is really gonna help out, like just relocating around the 3-point arc and presenting yourself as a 3-point threat. That's just something Trey has to do just based on the profile of, obviously he's gonna have, a lot of attention on him at all times, and if he's able to draw that defense out, then, he's either going to be able to drive and draw two people and kick out. So, but as far as the Orlando game in Mexico City, yeah, I mean, it's, he'll, sometimes when he's just got, the rhythm, he's able to take like, a team that's, they didn't really have any, I guess, I mean, they had, Jalen Suggs on him and things of that nature, but, he was able to attack early and kind of do what he does. They give him a lot of high screen roles and
Yeah, it's funny that Orlando game, it looked like he was kind of licking his chops. He's like, okay, these guys are playing Gogo Bitadze and Mo Wagner at center. Like, that's the starting point. And then it looked like to me, like, I don't think the Magic really wanted to switch, but their inexperience showed in that they weren't able to avoid switches. So finally Jamal Mosley was like, we just have to switch. And that wasn't really gonna work. Trey was gonna try to attack their five, right? And you could tell, like, to me, like, you could tell Cole Anthony was so frustrated. Cole Anthony did not want to switch. Like, he wanted his chance to kind of defend Trey. And Suggs was good too. But even like in the second half, they couldn't keep Suggs like on him because this is where Clint's value comes in. Like, Clint knows how. Clint's like, if you're not proactive and like beating me to the point of the screen, you're dead. Like, the switch is happening whether you want it to or not. And that's just a young defense. That's Suggs, I think, had like six steals, and they made some nice plays at times. You could see their athleticism and their length, but in the second half, it was like Clint was dictating terms all the time he was on the court, like everything, and Trey just took full advantage of that. But that was a young defense, and I think Trey knew. I mean, first of all, Trey knew like this is a showcase, so he's going to try to put on a show. The behind the back pass to Bogey had was really nice. The behind the back and then the lob to Jalen. So he was doing a little extra, right? But I think in the big picture, why he was kind of, I think he was just like, okay, I'm gonna tear these guys up, And that's not a disrespect. I think I'm so impressed with what the Magic have put together, and I'm impressed with the way that they're coached. But they looked like a young and experienced team that night, and I think
And they're
that's
missing their center too, so it's like,
right. Who's really good, So especially defensively, like, I mean, having Batase and not having a better solution. And I don't know, does Mosley, like, a month from now, is Isaac playing some five?
it seemed
He
like that
was
was something they did
really,
in that game. Yeah, like
they
that's when
did.
they actually
He
got their
was
defense
so good.
together.
Yeah, yeah. And it almost didn't matter if you were like switching, but I think then Mosley finally put him back at the four and was like, Well, if I put him at the four, I'm not going to put him in the. He's just going to be able to kind of play weak side helper, and he was just like, really impacting the play. So that gets some really good stuff on Orlando, but I think Trey was like, okay, they don't have, Wendell, and so we're I'm gonna go to work.
Any final thoughts? I have one if you don't have one, but I'll
I want to hear it, but I just want to ask quickly, what do you like? Again, I'm blue green colorblind. What do you guys think of the unis?
Oh, they look good. And the court
Yeah.
is actually even better than the uniforms. The court in
Yeah.
person is a that's an A plus court. And the
Yeah.
uniforms are pretty good. They have the horrific font for the ATL, but otherwise they're styled quite nicely.
They look good to me, but I don't ever know whether I'm seeing how much how close what I'm seeing is what everybody else is seeing. What about you, Wes? Did you like them?
Yeah, I'm with Kevin. The font, it just reminds me too much of like public transportation font, I guess. That's what, which, I don't know, maybe they're going for a MARTA thing, which is kind of nice, but yeah, the font just looks very like, just as just signage. The ATL, the lowercase ATL, but I do like the sky blue and the kind of shadow of the hawk over the court is pretty nice. Even if I still have no idea what lift as we fly means.
So, Kevin, what was your last thought there?
Oh, I just wanted to give a shout out to the Heat Media Corps for being just absolute shills. Like there are a few sets of media corps that are just like, yeah, they're gonna be kind of Homer, kind of delusional. And I think you see that most often in cities where the NBA is kind of the only major professional outfit in town. But as far as the Heat goes, it's a little bit different. It's just more like outright fandom. Like you see like the fists pumps and people there was clapping in the media booth tonight. Like, get it together, people, boys and girls. You're not supposed to be clapping in the media booth. So I just wanted to give the Heat Media Corps a special shout out for being completely unprofessional.
But I have to say, like the preseason game where I hung out with all of you on over on the media tour, even though I wasn't credentialed, right? When we had the event, I had to remind myself because I will react to things like either team does, just
Yeah,
how I
sure. I
watch a game,
react.
right?
Like if
Right.
something fantastic happens, I'll say, "Woo, wow, that was,
Yeah,
because it's,
right.
you're watching a spectacle.
But I had it when I was watching sitting there with you and Brad. I had to make like a real, I had to have a little talk with myself to not embarrass either one of you by forgetting that I'm in media territory here and I have to comport myself, a certain way, So I that was an adjustment for me.
Can you give that talk to Heat Media? Give that same talk to yourself to the Heat Media.
For a fee, speaking fee.
Wow, yeah, okay, that's tough.
I'm a
Well, they have
consultant.
it because I remember a conversation like 8 years ago. Like I wasn't in the conversation, but we had to wait for somebody to talk, and I'm just like 2 feet away from these Heat media that were talking, and they were so glad that the Heat had made the finals a year before because the extra paychecks had helped fund them build a pool in the backyard or something. So like, yeah, they're just along with those lines, they have the money to pay you the fees from the extra playoff games that they've
Hey,
had.
I get appreciating the way it impacts you personally and stuff. So, but quick answer here, like, 9 games. If you're giving them a grade, like what grade do you give them so far?
The Hawks?
Yeah. On the last 60 seconds here.
I'm going to say A minus and just base it more on process over product. I don't think the product has been an A minus, but I think looking at the process and the little details, I think it's probably something like an A minus.
Was
Yeah, I think so as well. I think for me, I kind of look at the rotation guys, like how many of the rotation guys have looked better than they did last year. And I think, I would say basically everybody but Trey in my mind has been as good or better than last year. So, I definitely give it a B plus, A minus, somewhere in that range.
Yep, A minus for me. So kind of a consensus there. So.
All right. Everyone pass on their greetings to Bob. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Bob.
Bye, Bob.